Today we're reading a very special verse. Canto 1, chapter 2, text 9. And this verse, actually, there's a little incident that Kelly Kentucky told me about, that a professor and scholar named, I'll have to ask him when he comes back in, who is writing about the Hare Krishna movement, if anybody knows who I'm talking about, I mentioned that. He asked Prabhupada, which verse is the most important in the Bhagavatam? And Prabhupada said, this one, 1, 2, 9. And then we're doing 10 also. So these are all pretty famous in Sanskrit. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So, when you see a HY and then you see the A, sometimes it can be confusing. We think it's he and then we break it up, but it's actually just, you just blend them together. So that makes it easier to sing. Dharmasya hyapa vargasya.
Dharmasya hyapa vargasya.
And then the same in the second line. Nartortha yopakalpate.
Nartortha yopakalpate.
Nartasya dharmaikantasya.
Nartasya dharmaikantasya.
Kamulabhaya hi smrita.
Kamulabhaya hi smrita.
Dharmasya pavargasya.
Dharmasya pavargasya.
Nartortha yopakalpate. Nartasya dharmaikantasya.
Nartasya dharmaikantasya.
Kamulabhaya hi smrita.
Kamulabhaya hi smrita.
Dharmasya hyapavargasya.
Dharmasya hyapavargasya.
Dharmasya nipavargasya.
Dharmasya nipavargasya.
Nartortha yopakalpate.
Nartortha yopakalpate.
Nartasya dharmaikantasya.
Nartasya dharmaikantasya.
Kamulabhaya hi smrita.
Kamulabhaya hi smrita.
Okay, let's say that word for word together. Dharmasya occupational engagement.
For one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service,
Dharma is his gratification,
Dharma
is his.
And it's set in the Dharma Eka, one Dharma. So that's the ultimate occupational service. Okay, translation. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. We can say this together. Let's start again. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. You should never be your fault with serving me. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. We have already discussed that pure devotional service to the Lord is automatically followed by perfect knowledge and detachment from material existence. And that's what Kalvin Prabhu spoke about yesterday. And I like how Prabhupada says, we have already discussed, so we're continuing with Prabhupada's, it's like a Prabhupada's class teachings. We already discussed, but there are others who consider that all kinds of different occupational engagements, including those of religion, are meant for material gain. Who wants to read next?
I have a question. Is there a relation between the word artha and arthaya? Artha end and artha material gain?
Artaya and artasya?
Artha, right before.
Oh, before it. Yeah. It's the root, right?
Yeah,
it's like the root of that word.
Same
word. Goal and conclusion. So the goal, material gain or material goal. That's my knowledge of it. But if anybody wants to add.
Yes. Is this artaya and artasya? Yes, it's the same word, but you see it's over here it's for material gain and over here it's off material gain.
Yeah.
So in the Sanskrit tables, that's why it's artaya, and over here it's artasya.
Mm. I read the word artha, which means end.
Yeah. End. Oh.
Yeah.
Goal. Sorry.
Okay, who wants to read starting from the general tendency?
The general tendency of any ordinary man in any part of the world is to gain some material profit in exchange for religious or any other occupational service. Even in the Vedic literatures, for all sorts of religious performances, an allurement of material gain is offered, and most people are attracted by such allurements or blessings of religiosity. Why are such so-called men of religion allured by material gain? Because material gain can enable one to fulfill desires, which in turn satisfies sense gratification. This cycle of occupational engagements includes so-called religiosity followed by material gain, and material gain followed by fulfillment of desires. Sense gratification is the general way for all sorts of fully occupied men. But in the statement of Sutta Goswami, as per the verdict of Srimad Bhagavatam, this is nullified by the present shloka. One should not engage himself in any sort of occupational service for material gain only, nor should material gain be utilized for sense gratification. How material gain should be utilized is described as follows.
One thing to note is how the American, especially the American mind, is really resistant to the word should. I was thinking about that. But in this context, actually, it's not the same as in other contexts. It's advising us for our best well-being, and therefore it's
positive connotation
here. So, yeah. Okay, text 10. Let's say the Sanskrit together for text 10, too.
Kamasya nendriya prithir labho jireta yavata jivasya tattva jikyasa nartulya seha karmani.
Text together. Life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Purport. I'm going to skip a little here, so you don't need to worry about it. I'm just going to read that. In the political field, the leaders of men fight with one another to fulfill their personal sense gratification. The voters adore the so-called leaders only when they promise sense gratification. I thought that was pretty relevant to today. As soon as the voters are dissatisfied in their own sense satisfaction, they dethrone the leaders. The leaders must always disappoint the voters by not satisfying their senses. The same is applicable in all other fields. No one is serious about the problems of life. Even those who are on the path of salvation desire to become one with the absolute truth and desire to commit spiritual suicide for sense gratification. But the Bhagavatam says that one should not live for sense gratification. One should satisfy the senses only in so much as required for self-preservation and not for sense gratification. Because the body is made of senses, which also requires a certain amount of satisfaction, there are regulative directions for satisfaction of such senses. But the senses are not meant for unrestricted enjoyment. For example, marriage or the combination of a man with a woman is necessary for progeny, but it's not meant for sense enjoyment. In the absence of voluntary restraint, there is propaganda for family planning. But foolish men do not know that family planning is automatically executed as soon as there is search after the absolute truth. It's pretty brilliant, isn't it? Automatic family planning as soon as you become a devotee. Seekers of the absolute truth are never allured by unnecessary engagements in sense gratification, because the serious students seeking the absolute truth are always overwhelmed with the work of researching the truth. Yeah, so we'll end there. I just thought that was pretty creative the way Prabhupada explains that. That basically spiritual seekers are so short, they don't need to worry about family planning. Okay. So I want to start with a little exercise and a little experiment, actually. I want everybody to, I'm going to show you something, like an object, and I want you to take a mental note of your first feeling when you see the object or your first thought when you see the object, okay? So I want you to all close your eyes first, and I'll tell you when to open them, and then you'll look at the object I'm showing you. Keep them closed. Okay, open them. Just to yourself, your first response. Okay. So that's my show and tell for the day. Just one word responses. What was your,
Yes, I have changed.
You have changed.
My mind went, ooh, money.
I was just thinking it was a newer print dollar bill. I just made out the dollar, but it was a newer print because of the gradations of color.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yes.
Car.
Car. Car. Okay, any others?
Loba.
What was that?
Loba.
Loba. Loba, like hankering?
Green.
Green. Okay, green. Any other? I mean, some people probably just didn't think anything.
I just talked money.
Yeah, money.
Yeah.
So that was just to introduce the topic of today's class. And I was thinking about they have these cartoons where they show people that are greedy and they have little dollar signs like in their eyes and they're like thinking about money. There's a need for, In Charles Dickens' novel, anybody know the person that was really obsessed with money?
Scrooge.
Scrooge, yeah. And it's actually such a famous character that it became a word. Like, to be a Scrooge means to be somebody who's just gathering in the money and keeping it and being very stingy with your money, really absorbed. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, in the chapter of the divine and demoniac natures, he describes how the demons or those of demoniac natures view money, that they want to get more and more. When is it coming? How can I get more? That's their joy in life. How can I get more money? So we've heard how money is Krishna's energy, and I want to ask you a question. How is money Krishna's energy? Yes, Lavanga.
Because money is the expansion of Lakshmi, and that's Krishna's energy.
Exactly, yeah. We also get, it's a similar parallel is when we hear how Balaram comes in different forms to serve Krishna, like the throne, the danga, the different. Similarly, Lakshmi Devi manifests in different ways, and one of them is through money. The current Kaliyuga version of money is thin paper strips, but centuries ago would have been gold, like weighed out and actually calculated the worth of and then used like that. So what happens when a materialist gets really absorbed in, it's not a particular person, but it's a particular mentality. We all have experience of that, is we see money go, woo, money, I want some, I need some, I need money. Most people here need money. and we get excited, and there are tendencies towards, or let's say, when you get absorbed in just collecting money, and even having a lot of money results in different kinds of miseries. We think it's going to make us really happy, but even studies have shown that, I was looking into this actually, about lottery winners, that when they, we've heard this study from a while ago where you only had her for a year and that one, but more recent study from last year showed that after getting, this was in Sweden, so after lottery winners got their money, their happiness didn't increase, but the rate of life satisfaction was increased for about 10 years. But it's not the same as happiness. Satisfaction just means I'm content with my life right now. I don't have to worry about bills and like that. That's different from happiness, which we think is connected to money. Happiness just is elation of joy that's going to continue, which doesn't happen for most people, maybe for a day or two. So one of the results of having or being in this mentality of money, of wanting to enjoy money, is greed. Who said, yeah, lopa, greed, that hankering, and it creates a society where people get jealous and envious of those who do have money because everybody thinks that's what's going to make us happy. So people are very private about talking about their money because of that. If you don't share, like, oh, I just got a $10,000 check. You wouldn't post that publicly because it would create a lot of envy, or it would just change the way people perceive you. As this money has a lot of different possibilities around how it's perceived. And Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that greed is one of the gates to a hellish condition. So lust, anger, and greed, those are all connected. There's a story that I want to tell you that ties into this, and then we're going to look at, from that story, we're going to look at then how to use money positively and how to engage in Krishna service. So the story is that there was the son's name was Gopinath Patanayaka. So this father was actually in his past life, or in Krishna's Lila, was Pandu, the father of the Pandavas. So Arjuna is one of the Pandavas. There's five of them, right? Sons of Pandu. And they all came again in Lord Chaitanya's Lila as this family of five sons and their father. So one of the sons was a tax collector for the king and in Orissa. Who here has been to Orissa? Oh, okay. So five people. So he was a tax collector, which is a very, you have to be really trustworthy to be a tax collector. So he would gather taxes and turn it in to the king, and he mostly worked through the prince, not directly with the king, but through the prince. And then he became a little lazy about turning in his own portion that he owed. And it gathered up, it accrued, and it became what they called 200,000 crores at the time. That was the money of the time. So he owed a lot. And he got in trouble, and he met with the prince. And no, what happened is he actually didn't have the money to pay that. He was in debt, or he was just not able to pay it. So when he met with the prince, the son of King Pratapurudra. The prince was actually scheming a way to cheat him. So what happened is that Gopinath Patanayaka, instead of having cash, or not cash, but like coins or shells that they used then, he said, okay, I'll trade you a bunch of my horses. I'll give you these horses, and you can calculate the value of those horses, and that'll pay off my what I owe. But the prince told the person who calculates, like the one who makes those prices, said to him, just say it's a little less than it's actually worth, than the horses are actually worth. So then the prince said, well, those horses are not worth the total, like you're not paying your full amount. And Gopinath Patanayaka was smart and very sharp when it came to calculations, and he knew that they were worth that much. The prince had a little bit of his neck would kind of like snap up, or he would sort of have this like tick, like almost like a tick of the neck. Yeah, maybe that's the original, not the original, but one of the first accounted for in the scriptures. So he had that condition, and Gopinath Patanayaka was mad. So he said to the prince, well, my horses don't have that condition of their neck. Therefore, they're worth more than you say. And but he threw in a little criticism of the prince into that. The prince became really angry. His ego was hurt. And he said, okay, that's it. We need to... So he went to complain to the king, and he fabricated a whole story so that the king would agree to letting Gopinath Patanayaka be killed, basically. So at the time, they had a device called a changa. Who here has seen a changa? Probably not. So a changa is... Yes, Rupa Changa? Actually, it's not. It's close, though. But it's a platform that they had over upright swords, and then they pulled the platform from under the person. So it's pretty intense. It almost sounds worse than being hanged, because you're being pierced. Hopefully you die right away, but it sounds very horrible. So that was what he was destined for. The king agreed because the prince made up this whole story about him. So he was on the platform, and devotees heard about this, because this was a devotee family. Gopinath Patanayaka was a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. And devotees heard about the news, and they ran to speak with Lord Chaitanya and warn him, or to just urge him to help the situation. Please help. This is not, it's not fair. He should be, killed. And for the sake of the pastime, Lord Chaitanya became upset and said, how do you expect me to help? I'm a renounced mendicant, basically, and a sannyasi. And I can't do anything. I don't get involved in politics or in money matters. So don't come to me with this. Just all go to Lord Jagannath and pray. Because he did give that advice. All devotees go and pray for his benefit. So while they were praying to the deity of Lord Jagannath, in the heart of one of the ministers of the king, Pratavarja, one of his ministers, super soul, made him tell the king the actual story at that same time. And this is a tense moment, because Gopinath Patanayaka is already on the platform. It's like really a dramatic scene. This could make a great play or a movie or something, because it's so such a tense build-up. So they're praying, and then the king is hearing the true story, and he says, oh, I didn't know that. That's not what I was told before. The minister told the whole story, and then the king realized who the family was, and he realized, oh, he's the brother of Ramananda Roy, who I love so much. He's a pure devotee, and he realized the whole connection. Before, it was just anonymous, I think. It was just a criminal. He thought the person was a criminal. So he pardoned Gopinath Patanayaka and said, of course. And he actually said, oh, he apologized, and he met with him and said, not only you don't need to pay that anymore, I clear your debt, and I'm promoting you. He felt so bad. So the news came back to Lord Chaitanya. Prataparudra through another devotee, and then Lord Chaitanya eventually met with the family, and they offered their obeisances and they thanked him for his help and or for his blessings and the prayers that the devotees had given, and they knew that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he helped through the heart of that minister in interfering in that story. And Lord Chaitanya gave some really good advice to... Actually, I'll share that with you. To Gopinath Patanayaka. He said... Whether you are involved in material activities or become completely renounced, you and your brothers are my eternal servants, birth after birth. But I ask you to obey one order of mine. Do not spend money which belongs to the king. Pay the king his dues, and then spend the balance for religious and fruitive activities. Don't spend a farthing for sinful activities, otherwise you will be the loser both in this life and the next. A farthing, I believe, is British. Is it a... Does anybody know?
Farthing?
Yeah. So Prabhupada's using that because he was from colonial times in India. So don't spend a farthing for simple activities, otherwise you will be the loser both in this life and the next. So it ties back into the verses really well, that when we get really entangled in trying to absorb or get entangled with this material energy that Lalonga described, and use it for our own gratification, it actually pulls us down. It acts almost like a quicksand. Does everybody know what quicksand is? Or like in the jungles, the Amazon jungles, they have these pits of sand that kind of, I'm not sure how, but maybe they're mixed with something, properties that pull you, and when you're trying to struggle to get out, they actually pull you more down. Mm-hmm. Or I think about like a spider web where you're for a small bug that they're trying to get out and they can't move. And the more they try to move, the worse it gets. So if the more we're trying to enjoy our senses, the more unhappy we become. Oh, I gotta try harder, and I gotta do this, and it gets to the point where I'll even do things that are not legal, or I'll do things that are like what Chaitanya was saying. Do not spend money which belongs to the king. He's giving him really practical advice. And it creates a life that's actually miserable. And Lord Chaitanya is advising him, whenever you do get money, use that energy in the service of Krishna and in the service of devotees. I'm interested in psychology, so I'm always thinking about like how this applies to the psychology of the human. And it's there are studies showing how, for example, there's a study where they give everybody $5, and then they say, you can either keep that for yourself, or you can give that to someone. And then they ask people what they did, and then they rate their the satisfaction that person felt, the happiness, and other studies too, where they showed that the people who gave the $5, obviously they had increased happiness and feelings of fulfillment. I gave this away. I was generous. I wasn't just keeping it for myself. And there's another study where even thinking about, like this is from 2017, even thinking about what you might do with money in a generous way increases your happiness, your sense of fulfillment as a person. Even, it's not as much as if you actually give the money, but if you're thinking in generous ways. So how does that apply to spiritual life? If we're, whatever money comes to us, Lakshmi is, another name for Lakshmi is Chanchala, which means coming and going. It's kind of out of our control. It comes into our life, it goes, and who here has experienced that? Moments of being down in the dumps and then times where you have adequate money? Anybody else? Most people, right? Has comes and goes. Especially as life moves on, I think it starts seeing that pattern more. And it comes and goes, so we can't hold on to it. And when it does come into our life, this energy of Krishna. When we use it in Krishna's service, then it immediately fulfills us, even more than these psychological studies. It fulfills us on soul level. So I just think it's interesting how these studies are showing a superficial understanding of these of what's happening, but from a material perspective, so they don't go quite deep enough. So materially, yes, we'll feel happy if we donate or if we help someone in need with our money, if we're generous. And spiritually, our soul will feel satisfied, and that means that we will be in connection with Krishna. We'll be serving Krishna, and this will be bringing us the ultimate satisfaction. Prabhupada actually said, there was a picture, I think, of a yogi that was gathering. It was a news article, or somebody had shown something to Prabhupada with somebody gathering money and saying, not gathering money, abstaining from money, being like an ascetic, pushing it away, like, oh, I'm not attracted to money, I'm like that. So some person in India, I think. And Prabhupada said, oh, you can take a picture of me going, bring it, like gathering in all the money. Because the point being that it's not about just renouncing it. It's not just like, okay, money is entangling and it's just going to cause me a headache and all my friends are going to want my money and it's just going to... And so I'm just going to basically give it all away and just be in poverty or just live really simple so that I don't have to think about it. Like an artificial kind of renunciation. That's actually not that's not what will satisfy Krishna. So Prabhupada is using that example to tell his disciples, look, it's not money. We're not afraid of money. We're actually happy to have money, but we remember that it's not ours. We're using it. And everything that came to Prabhupada, he was immediately putting it into projects that were helping the whole world spiritually. So he wasn't attached to that personally. It's not like the Scrooge image could be the same, like gathering in the money, but it's all going for me. Where a devotee is gathering in the money, but it's all going to Krishna. So it's completely opposite, even though it looks like the same activity. So when we come in contact with that energy of Krishna, we can feel grateful. Oh, Krishna's taking care of me, he's providing for me. And even if we don't have extra, any time in life when we have money, the energy of money, it's important to tie it back into Krishna, back into Krishna's service. So even if we only have $1, we can give 10 cents of that to something for Krishna. And this was exemplified in the way that Rupa Goswami, he's one of the six Goswamis of Lord Chaitanya, the six followers of Lord Chaitanya that wrote the literatures. And he would divided up his finances in a way that was like, part of it was for sustaining his existence and like daily maintenance, and part of it was for emergencies, kind of like a savings account that you dip into when you're in an emergency, and then part of it was for donations or for spiritual causes. So that's a good example. His ratios or his percentages might not be practical for us, because he was doing 50% giving away. So that might be high for most of us, but even a little, even 1% of the money that you have, if you can turn it back to some, like a project, something spiritual. For example, if you move out of Krishna house and you start making money, that would be a good opportunity to, just a little plug-in, like to start tithing back to Krishna house. Like to, wow, that place really helped me, and so you give a percentage of it. Yeah, things like that. So so you tie it back, you always tie that energy of Krishna back into his service. Of course, the other parts of it, like the daily maintenance and all that, can also be applied to Krishna service, because we're living lives, our lives are used for Krishna. We're offering all of our activities to Krishna, whether it's serving Krishna lunch, whether it's studying, teaching, working, anything that we do, we're tying it back, we're doing it with intention of pleasing Krishna. So that money that goes into those activities is also indirectly going into serving Krishna. But if you can also directly give some money to a project that inspires you to help that the movement actually expand. So I'll end there, and if there are any thoughts, comments. Oh, actually, I have one more thing. Just thought of with the lottery thing that I mentioned. So when I was growing up, and I thought this was really kind of a neat thing that my father used to do with, when we would drive by these billboards, especially in, I believe in Georgia, they have a lot of those, I think, yeah, they have like a lot of those lottery signs, right? $1 million, yeah. And your eyes go bling, and you wanna go and get the lottery ticket. So whenever we would drive by those as a family, my father would say, okay, kids, what would you do with that money if you got it? What would you do for Krishna? And then we would come up with this like exercise of how we would use that and what we would do for, you know, the expansion of ISKCON or for a project that we, oh no. So just really quickly, like one or two or three of you, what would you do if you got $1 million? Yes, Vaninath Prabhu.
Just a little bit of a side. My wife and I started this project on the way back from we had visited a relative. Oh, it was a funeral, so we were on the way back driving from Pensacola. So we actually started going through the alphabet to come up with different projects, etc. And I actually have a book that I started with that in mind of the different areas that would be of interest to finance with large sums.
Alphabetical,
down the alphabet. Because it's easy to forget, and we were all over the place. And I said, "Oh, that's a good idea." But this, so we thought, "Okay, let's start with A's." And it's still a work in progress.
Nice, yeah. It's a creative way to engage the mind in Krishna service. Who else has that? Lavanga.
How to renovate this temple, and then renovate the ashram.
Okay. You already thought about it. Yeah.
I first put the money in mutual funds. Then I did it that many times.
Okay. Actually, it's that can also be used in Krishna service too, because like accruing the interest, and then when you finally accrue all the interest, then you give that to Krishna too. So. Anybody else?
I would deck out the kirtans right here, the best kirtans blanket. Probably the best kirtan blanket ever. Recently, before I came here, I was at a very long house program with Bhakti Purushottama Swami, and he was showing all of us how he was doing these schools in villages in northern Asian areas. I don't know exactly where it was, but I was seeking to do something similar, like in African countries or or any kind of like third world area, starting schools. But also at the same time giving a Krishna consciousness as like the, you know, like here's your school, but also like, ooh, Krishna consciousness sort of thing. But I think you're
very nice. Yeah, very creative.
I started Krishna House at some university. Okay, there's none.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, definitely that was what your project needed, was a good chunk of money. So any questions, comments, or more? Yeah, go on. Okay.
Media photos would be, but I think like creating places for older devotees can retire and people like all over. Making a Bhakti Shastri school in America, like to go to India, a national for girls all over, and helping South America temples a lot because there's nothing like so many things the body is not structured anymore.
Nice, very nice ideas. Yeah, any questions or comments?
So just in general, in the social organization, just like we've heard these very good ideas, where is that money to come from?
That's a big question that is I can't answer that in 1 minute.
Was it from the scratch off ticket? Was that
about
the thing?
Scratch off ticket. I don't know.
You mean in general, like how do we get the money for these projects? Mm-hmm. So money is one of Krishna's energies, and when Krishna is, it's sort of one of those things, because it comes with so many strings that could entangle us in material life, Krishna doesn't bestow it easily. It's not like, oh, all my devotees, you all get $1 million, because we still have the tendency within until we're pure devotees, we have that desire to enjoy ourselves, right? To enjoy our senses. So, and Krishna knows that. So he gives us what's best for our situation. And sometimes his ways are mysterious. Seems like a devotee is very sincere and the project would be ideal. But then Krishna creates another. If that door closes, Krishna creates another opportunity that was actually better for everyone. So, yeah.
I was thank you for that class. I was reflecting how Srila Prabhupada started off with nothing. And that actually appealed to people that have seen these wealthy swamis, uptown swamis in New York, seeing this impoverished, very simple sadhu, very happy, even in his materially destitute condition.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada always said that Krishna would send the money. So some years later in New York, my godbrothers told me he was making a deposit in a bank, as the treasurer for the temple. And the Harinam party came out in front of the bank at the same time while he was waiting in line. And the people in front of him said to each other, "See those people? They're the Hare Krishnas. Fabulously wealthy. Fabulously wealthy." Huh. So as soon as there was a little opulence, then people became very envious.
Yeah.
That's an interesting juxtaposition I just want to share.
Yeah, that's really, and Krishna, like again, Krishna's hand is in that too. Like in the fact that everything was materially taken away from Prabhupada, so that he arrived in that situation, and it did endear the hearts of the people even more, because they were that time period in history was one where people were rejecting material opulence and searching for something deeper. So it was perfect that Prabhupada arrived in that situation. Yeah. So thank you all very much, and I hope you use your. Yeah, sorry.
There's a mic right there.
Prabhupada was approached by disciples some Swami approached Prabhupada and said, "Oh, I don't take money." And Prabhupada said, "When I'm offered money, I go, gimme, gimme, gimme. Because I use it in Krishna's service." And that was the difference. From the beginning, Prabhupada was very poor. And later on, when the movement grew very big, Prabhupada used that opulence as a way of attracting people. Either way, so the key was neutrality towards money. It's just an object to use for service. And if it takes us away, that's not a very good thing. And sometimes Krishna actually takes it all away from us. And if we can use it, sometimes Krishna gives us more than we know what to handle.
Yeah, there's that Prabhupada said that Krishna will give you more than you can take with your two hands. Or he'll take away everything before you can even do anything about it. So either way is Krishna's mercy. And we have to be careful not to think that money means Krishna's smiling at me. It's not like that. Krishna, money is not even, it's not a reflection of Krishna's mercy on us. It might be that Krishna takes everything away because of how that will help us grow as people. Or he might give us a lot of money, and but it doesn't mean that Krishna likes one person, doesn't like another person.
Your point reminded me of a lecture I heard about, like, when good things happen to us, we're like, "Ah, Krishna's mercy," but when bad things happen to us, we're like, "Why, Krishna?" We don't see that. That's also Krishna's mercy.
Yeah, really nice point. Yeah, thank you. Yes.
I was just thinking that the story of Sudama is a really good example of like what you're talking about.
I'm gonna tell the whole story.
Almost out of time, but Which part of it? I want to say the part that you...
Just the part where when he went there, he was only going to be asking for what he needed.
Yeah.
And Krishna didn't give any hints that he was going to give him anything. And there was a lot of pressure because his wife was like, oh, no, you can ask him. Like, you're really good friends with him. And then when he came home, like, he couldn't even recognize his own wife because she was just so decked out. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just showing that, like, almost like trust. And then after that, like, he had his whole temple room and he was just like still the same. He knew how to handle it responsibly, and his wife was really happy with him, so extra points for that, right?
Yeah, thanks for bringing up that. It's actually a really good example that his character didn't change. He was the same person before. This is a person who went from basically a rags to riches story, Sudama Brahmana. So he went from being super in poverty to really wealthy, but he stayed the same as a person. It didn't affect him. Yeah, so that's, thank you for sharing that. And one last Tulsiyan.
I found it interesting. I was at the food bank the other day, and there's an Indian dental student that's volunteering there, and he recognized me, and we started talking. And he volunteers his time, and he really puts his heart into the food bank. And he was telling, and he was asking me, oh, I heard the son of the Ford Motor Company is a Hare Krishna. And I said, yeah, actually he is. And he was saying, I heard he has a lot of money. Can he donate? We're trying to feed all these, you know, we're trying to like expand the food bank to feed so many school children and all these things, which is, it's a very nice thought that he has, you know, it's a sincere desire to want to help people. And I told him, actually, I think he's himself lives very simply. He lives like in a really simple mobile home, which you wouldn't think. But he's donated like all of the money that he has from his family to opening this big temple in Mayapur. And he was like, well, but how is that really going to help people? He was like, that's nice, you know, like, but maybe he could put some of his money into like helping people more and like into this project. So do you think you could talk to him for me? And I was like, I didn't want to argue it. I didn't want to like sit there and try to explain the whole philosophy because I just didn't want to waste time, you know, but I found it interesting that he didn't understand like that using money to help people become more Krishna conscious is actually something so valuable and more valuable than just temporarily feeding someone's stomach and not feeding someone's heart. And so I thought that was really, that's interesting that a lot of people have that perception of us, I feel like we're putting money into our temples and all these things, but what about the poor people, what about the homeless? And it's not that we don't care about the poor people and the homeless people, but we want people to be benefited spiritually, not just materially.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so we're over time, so thank you.